ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, Corbin Middlemass here. What's going on with the cricket? Well, that's what the ABC Cricket Podcast is for, with me and my sparring partner, Ed Cowan. Who's been selected?
He got another 100 during the week.
Who's been rejected?
So if he's not fit enough.
And who has the best grade cricket salad roll?
What was the key? The quality of the cheese or the bun?
The bun was always fresh, or the salad inside nice and soft.
Search for the ABC Cricket Podcast on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley. This week, I'm speaking with ABC presenters and journalists about their best stories and interviews from 2025. I'm joined by Lee Sales, Matt Bevan, Sarah Ferguson, and Stephanie March. Today, it's ABC finance presenter and commentator Alan Kohler on the rise of AI and the robots. Alan, you have spent a lot of 2025 considering AI, and it's been a huge year, of course, for artificial intelligence. Now, AI, it's already made huge changes to how we do things, right? I mean, as you note, why write an essay when ChatGPT can do it for you?
Yeah, so I use ChatGPT all the time, most days, in fact.
And I do too. And
it's great. It's fantastic, let's face it. But it's also true that the number of online articles being written now by artificial intelligence is above 50%, which is to say that there are more AI articles online than human being written ones.
Wow.
Which I think is a bit of a Rubicon that's been passed. But the thing is that we're kind of all used to AI as text on a screen, right? You call up the AI assistant that you're interested in using, whether it's ChatGPT or Perplexity or Claude or Copilot or whatever. And then you ask a question and it basically is a shortcut for internet search, you know, like rather than go through all the search, you just tell it what you want to know and it goes and finds it for you. And that's great. And so that to me is not a particularly disruptive thing. It's kind of definitely more efficient, but it's not that disruptive. I mean, my view is, and this is what I've been looking at lately, is where it really becomes a big deal, it seems to me, is when AI gets put into a humanoid robot. Because, you know, suddenly then what happens is the interaction with AI becomes conversation rather than text on a screen, which is kind of qualitatively different. But secondly, humanoid robots with AI brains are a whole new, a completely unprecedented development in humanity.
You're starting to scare me a bit early on here in this discussion. Alan, come on.
Well, I think we need to get onto this quite early because this is what it's all about. I mean, there are at least a dozen companies around the world developing humanoid robots, and one of them in China began shipping them to industrial companies, to Volkswagen and other car makers, to be used on the production line and in the warehouse. So these are humanoids, robots that behave, look like human beings.
Gosh. Yeah, Elon Musk, he thinks, or he says, that we might see, or we will see, according to him, a world of mass-produced robot workers within his lifetime.
I think that's right. I mean, we're into mass production now in China. I mean, Elon Musk also says that the Tesla's robot, which is called Optimus, will make an incredible surgeon.
Oh, gosh.
That's what he says. I mean, and that's what he's working on, creating a robot that'll be a surgeon. Well, I mean, that is a big deal.
Yes.
It seems to me. The big challenge with robots has been hands. They've kind of dealt with the business of getting them to stand up and be stable on two legs and not fall over, although a Russian one fell over on stage. It was quite funny. They unveiled their robot and it fell over.
Oh, gosh.
But getting them to run and dance and so on, that they've got that licked. The hand has been the difficult thing. But they've got that now. I mean, this London robot company announced the other day that they've got hands now that have 20 motors in them and 24 movement parts, and they're basically able to pick up a pencil and basically do very small motor movements.
Yeah, and I mean, surgeons use robots now to assist them in an operating theatre, but what you're saying is actually, we'll just get rid of the surgeon altogether.
Well, that's what Elon Musk is saying. I mean, I sort of think, well, okay, that's what they're working towards. Mm. So it's actually, when you think about it, we've only had a lack of slaves for 200 years, a bit less than 200 years. So, but for most of human commerce, 7,000 years, the economies of the world have been based on slavery, including all the empires, Egyptian, Roman, British Empire, built on slavery in the West Indies and America. And obviously, you know, slavery was moral abomination, and robots are not that. I mean, you know, it isn't the same thing at all. Mm. But still, the analogy is that robots and slaves are part of capital. You know, they're owned. It's labor that is owned, not employed.
Yeah.
And I think that capitalism and the corporate world is very keenly looking forward to having labour that they can own, not employ.
So robots will be the new slaves, and guess what? You don't have to pay them a wage, right? That's pretty good for a lot of companies.
Well, you have to service them. Sure. You've got to feed them with electricity. But basically, it's, as corporates say, it's CapEx, not OpEx. CapEx being capital expenditure,
right.
OpEx being operating expenditure, and the main OpEx for all companies is the payroll.
Mm.
And human beings are hard. You know, you've got to look after them. They have to go home. They have to sleep.
Mm. Right. So if this eventuates, as Elon Musk says that it will, a lot of people are going to lose their jobs, right? So do we have a sense of just how many of us might be out of work because a robot and AI can frankly just do our job better than we can?
Yeah, so there's a colossal range of predictions, and nobody's got any idea what's going to happen. And this is part of the problem, because it's very difficult to prepare for something if you don't know what it's going to be like. I mean, look, it is so the whole, let's start with taxation. The whole tax system is based on taxing the income of labour and taxing the individuals to do it, right? So, and then obviously on top of that, there's a capital gains tax, and there's GST, and there's company tax, and so on. But most of the tax is income tax for labour. And so if that changes significantly, then the tax system will have to be rethought.
Mm.
There'll have to be a different way of funding government and welfare and so on. And that's not impossible, but it's just, it's a big change. You know, like, how are they going to do it? And there's lots of different ways they can, obviously, through consumption or just taxing robot companies.
Mm.
And I'm not sure that governments are thinking about this yet. I mean, partly because they don't know what's going to happen, and they can see it, but they think, oh, crikey, what do we do about this? Oh, I don't know. Let's just focus on today's problem, you know, today's news event.
Mm. But how do you actually tax a robot company if it's actually based overseas, which is pretty likely, right?
Well, it absolutely will be likely. I mean, that's what's going to happen. So the only way you can do it is to tax their revenue in Australia.
Right.
And so that probably gets to what the Productivity Commission is suggesting, which is a cash flow tax rather than a profits tax. The problem with profits taxes is they can shift their profits to somewhere else in the world. And all these big tech companies do that already. But if you can tax in some way the cash flow that's generated here, then that's what gets around that. And I think that that's the sort of thing they'll need to do. I mean, I do think the whole situation is going to require some innovation from governments in the way they organise taxation, and probably some things that we haven't thought of yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, what other ways could you replace this income tax that the government has become so heavily reliant on?
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, the easiest way to collect taxes is on transactions, whether it's the payment of a wage or the buying of a product or the transacting of a property or an asset through a capital gains tax. So, you know, that's the kind of the easy way to do it. wealth tax is difficult because you have to then, you charge a percentage of someone's assets, and that's hard. We already do that with land taxes. People have to cough up a percentage of the property's value each year, which is hard. So how do you do it with robots and AI? I'm not sure. Yes. Really. I mean, I think you could possibly do it as a sort of a, if somebody buys a robot, they're going to pay a big tax on it. You could possibly do that.
Gosh.
But, you know, I'm not sure. Yes. I don't know.
But you seem to argue, Alan, that in fact it might be better, which sounds a bit odd, but you'll explain it, for like 50% of people to actually lose their jobs to robots, to AI, because that's when a government will have to entirely rethink the economy and social economics and how things are done. Just explain that.
Well, I was just thinking, because I've seen predictions that half the workforce will be out of work, and I've seen predictions that it'll be 10% of permanent unemployment. And the problem with, it feels to me like permanent unemployment of 10% won't be revolutionary. It won't require a rethink. It'll just mean that 10% of people will suffer and undergo, you know, the misery of unemployment and not be able to get a job. But the governments won't have to, in that situation, they won't have to rethink the whole way that the system works. Whereas if it's kind of more, you know, if it's more like 40 or 50%, then it will have to, the whole system will have to be rethought. And there'll have to not only be a change in the way taxation works, but there'll have to be a change in the way people are paid. You know, there would have to be some kind of universal basic income. And the governments would not only have to do that to ensure that, you know, half the workforce, half the population survived, that they'd have to fund it. And they'd have to make sure that the companies that were earning the money from robots paid a proper amount of tax. So I was just thinking that at least with 40 or 50% permanent unemployment, you know, there will have to be a full change in the way that society works. Whereas if it's only 10%, maybe the governments would think they can get away with just making 10% of people miserable.
Alan, expand on that idea of universal basic income, because what is that and how would that work? There's no country at the moment that has that in place, right?
I think someone's trying it out, but it's as a sort of a test, but it's very difficult. I mean, we're talking about an amount of money that's paid to everybody every month or quarter or something. And it's sort of, I think the idea is that it replaces welfare in some way, that basically everybody gets an amount of money. I mean, obviously it'd be very difficult to fund it.
Yes, you know, like, hugely expensive.
It's a huge amount of money. So how do you do that? Yeah. I mean, so, and it's become a bit of a passionate project for a lot of people. I get correspondence from people kind of passionately advocating a UBI as if it's some kind of general solution to the problems of the world. I don't think it is. But I do think that, you know, if we end up with some sort of level of permanent unemployment that is greater than 3 or 4% that we've got at the moment, then, you know, we are going to have to think about how we keep people going. I mean, the problem is that the job seeker allowance or the, you know, payment at the moment is designed to get people between jobs. And, you know, in order to qualify for it, you have to keep sort of applying for jobs, and also the amount is nowhere near enough to live on. So those are the things that are going to have to be rethought. The amount is probably too low if somebody has to live on it for a long time, and you can't have it that you, in order to qualify, you have to keep applying for jobs. That's ridiculous.
But is it permanent unemployment? Because, you know, people point to the Industrial Revolution. You know, people retrained. We got used to it. It ended up being good for all of us. So can't these people, they're losing their jobs, but, you know, go do something else?
Yeah, but it took at least 50 years. I mean, it took a long time.
Yeah.
There was an awful lot of misery, a lot of inequality, you know, a lot of oppression. And even after it started to come good, employers, capitalists, were brutally oppressing workers. We had child labour, you know, people were working 16 hours a day, 6 days a week. And it wasn't until Karl Marx came along and unionism began that started to be redressed. But it led to, you know, decades of conflict. strikes and pickets and even revolutions. You know, the Marxist revolution in Bolshevik revolution in Russia coming out of Marxism. I mean, that wasn't just about labor, obviously, but it came out of that whole oppression that took place during the 19th century. So, you know, I don't think that's something we need to or should want to go through. I mean, that is going, you know, that'd be appalling if we had to go through that, you know, but it's possible that we have to go through something like that in order to restructure society in the way that's going to work properly.
The other thing, of course, is, aren't we all just going to be a little bit bored, Alan? What are we going to do with our time when we no longer have a job?
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, at work is how we organise our lives. I mean, it gives us community, it gives us meaning. I mean, you and I are journalists. That's what we are. That's who we are. We're journalists. We're defined, in a way, by our work. Well, what if our work is done in future by a robot? Well, what do? We're going to have to rethink our lives, I think. What does it mean? I don't know. I mean,
a different meaning of life. Oh my gosh. Okay.
I mean, I've been a journalist for 55 years. So I'm 73. You know, like, it's too late for me. It's too late for me to think of something else.
Tell me, just before we move on then, if you've got kids or if you are like a teenager and you're leaving school and you're thinking about the profession you want to go into, I mean, should you be giving that a really good deep think at this point? Because some of those professions might not be lasting very long from what you're saying.
Totally. Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, don't be a computer coder. Everyone was told, you know, computer coding is the way to go. But now, forget it. That's not going to work. That's being done by AI now. What else should you do? I don't know. I mean, I think that the profession that's probably most protected is going to be sport.
Right, yes.
Being a cricketer or a footballer, no one's going to watch robots doing cricket. That's going to be boring.
Oh, that might be a bit hard for a lot of us at this point. But anyway, we could always try cricket.
I know, you're right. It's hard. It's hard to be a professional sports person. That's
tough. Sure is. Oh, my gosh. All right. Okay. I mean, would there be enough people around, do you think, Alan, that would try and stop this, that would see that having a robotic workforce might not be in the best interests of society as a whole, and perhaps they step in and stop that happening?
Well, yeah, look, I mean, people with money have power, that's true, but they also only have one vote each.
Yes.
So, you know, the hope would be that governments are motivated more by trying to stay in power and winning elections than by pleasing people who are rich. Because eventually the governments have to do things. I mean, but look, it is, every now and again, the government, in Australia at least, and elsewhere, has had to come up with a new tax because the existing revenue isn't enough. So in 1985, they had to come up with capital gains tax, which bolstered tax revenue because the revenue wasn't enough. And then in 2000, it was the GST that the Treasury told the government, you know, you've got to come up with something new because we haven't got enough money coming in, and that's probably going to have to happen again. You know, there'll have to be some kind of new tax that'll bolster the revenue to deal with supporting people who are out of work as a result of AI. So what is that tax going to be? I don't know. We had an inheritance tax for a long time between 1915 and 1970s. So we might have to go back to that. Some countries have got a wealth tax, not many, but wealth taxes are difficult, as I was saying before, difficult to impose, but that's another way of doing it. I mean, if you think about it, we've already got wealth tax in the form of land tax and council rates, which are levied according to the value of someone's property. So a wealth tax really is a new tax on people's shareholdings, which rich people do not want. And maybe that'll have to be thought of in some way. Look, you know, it's not as if there's no ideas out there that can be applied. It's just a matter of governments having the actual courage to do it. Governments in Australia are very reluctant to put in new taxes, whatever they might be, whether it's a change to negative gearing or even a reduction in the capital gains tax discount seems to be off the agenda, but I think they'll have to start doing stuff like that pretty soon.
Well, of course, we have, Alan, really been considering the AI out of America, really. But also, I guess, just briefly, we should just mention this is kind of going on in a big way in China too, right? So is that something that we should really be keeping an eye on?
Of course, yeah, sure. I mean, China, as I mentioned before, a Chinese company called UbiTech is now shipping robots. Mm. So I think they're the first to mass ship them. I saw a video the other day of another company having a whole kind of what looked like an aircraft hangar full of serried ranks of robots marching like that movie I, Robot.
Oh, gosh.
You know, so China is possibly ahead of the US in all this. Certainly it's neck and neck. You know, Europe's in there as well. They're having a go. There's a few companies in the UK. There's some in Canada. So there's companies all over the world, but it's primarily a race between America and China. Mm. And a race means that they're going breakneck speed. The governments, in fact, are in both China and America are encouraging it, urging them on, paying them in some ways to do it. And so there's no one sort of pulling on the reins saying, whoa, hang on, what's all this going to mean?
Mm. Well, Alan, now, just before I let you go, what does ChatGPT reckon? You know, you've asked it, haven't you? What's going to happen? What should we expect? You've typed that. I know you've typed that into ChatGPT. So what does it tell you?
What does it say? It says...
Well, it was very polite to you, first of all. I remember that because it was what a great question.
I love ChatGPT because whenever you ask it a question, you know, it tells you what a fantastic question that was.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, it's very polite.
You're so nice. You're so very smart. You are. It says, humanoid robots represent the first credible pathway for capital to operate with minimum reliance on human labour at all. It's historically unprecedented and politically explosive if it's mishandled.
Right.
We're not reviving the past. We are entering something genuinely new. The question is whether it becomes a liberation or a crisis for the humans who are left behind.
Oh, gosh.
And that is what ChatGPT says. And so, yeah, I mean, it doesn't know. And nobody knows, really. That's part of the problem.
All right. Well, I'm going to go off and take up golf or something that I could get good at. I think I've left my run a bit late. That's all, Alan.
Yeah, me too.
All right, Alan, thank you so much.
Not at all.
Alan Kohler is the ABC's finance presenter. Join me tomorrow on ABC News Daily. I'll be joined by Stephanie March from the ABC's Foreign Correspondent Program on some of her best stories of the past year, from elephants in Botswana to Georgia's slide towards autocracy. And on Wednesday, join me with the host of If You're Listening, Matt Bevan. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed, audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is David Cody. You can find past episodes of ABC News Daily on the ABC Listen app. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.